I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It is disastrous that the Security Council was again prevented from rising to this moment to uphold its clear responsibilities in the face of this grave crisis, threatening human lives and threatening regional and international peace and security.
Israel's continuing to attack Gaza after the United States vetoed a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. We'll get response and speak to a doctor in Gaza who works at one of the last functioning hospitals in the besieged enclave as the death toll in Gaza reaches 18,000.
We are dying from starvation. From everything, we are dying now. All over, actually, they send these rockets over our heads everywhere, every time. Please, please stop this war against us. Please stop genocide against us. Stop this war, please, please. I beg you.
Plus, the State Department's bypassing Congress to send nearly 14,000 rounds of tank ammunition to Israel. And the University of Pennsylvania president Liz McGill resigns following a contentious congressional hearing on anti-Semitism. Is this part of a broader effort to restrict pro-Palestinian speech on campus? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's unrelenting assault on the Gaza Strip continues as the death toll has reached 18,000 Palestinians killed in just over 2 months. Airstrikes rocked the Nusayrat and Mahazi refugee camps in central Gaza overnight. At least 23 people died in Mahazi. Airstrikes also struck at least two residential homes in Rafah. Meanwhile, the ground battle is pushing ahead in Khan Yunis, which is under heavy bombardment. Gazan women say Israeli soldiers forced them to leave their husbands and sons behind and flee their Gaza City homes. They spoke from the Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Deir Abala, where they were taking refuge.
They made us go to the south. They did not let us wait for our husbands. They said, go to the south from here, and that is it. And they made us leave. They lied to us, saying the road is safe, but they were shooting us throughout the way. We asked the Israeli interrogator where our male relatives. He said they are gone. No one is left. We asked about the children. He said all of them are gone. Palestine is gone. Gaza is gone.
The mass displacement and war on the besieged territory has led to a public health disaster. The UN's World Food Program warns half of Gaza's population of over 2 million people starving and that 9 out of 10 people are not able to eat every day. As clean water becomes more scarce, diarrhea, skin infections, acute viral hepatitis, scabies, measles are multiplying. Earlier today, the World Health Organization passed a resolution calling for immediate humanitarian aid access and an end to fighting in Gaza. In the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem, usually busy streets and commercial areas are empty today in observance of a general strike for Gaza. Global actions are also taking place today, including marches and calls to refrain from buying anything. Meanwhile, a UN peacekeeping force in Lebanon's warning the likelihood of a wider conflict's increasing amidst escalating cross-border violence between Israel and Hezbollah. The UN General Assembly will hold a special session Tuesday after Egypt and Mauritania invoked Resolution 377, known as Uniting for Peace. The move came in response to the U.S. on Friday, again vetoing a UN Security Council resolution calling for an urgent ceasefire in Gaza. Resolution 377 is designed to be deployed when the Security Council fails to, quote, exercise its primary responsibility for the maintenance of international police and security. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called for the UN body to be reformed Saturday following the U.S. veto.
With the torment in Gaza, we believe that this helpless and dysfunctional structure of the United Nations will be questioned all over the world. Look, I'm saying very openly, nothing can continue as business as usual after Gaza.
Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department bypassed congressional review to approve the emergency sale of over $100 million in tank ammunition to Israel. We'll deal with this issue later in the broadcast. The president of the University of Pennsylvania has stepped down following intense Republican-led backlash after her handling of anti-Semitism on campus and her contentious testimony before Congress last week. President Liz McGill's resignation Saturday, followed by that of UPenn Board of Trustees Chair Scott Bach, came amidst a mounting attack on students calling for Palestinian rights on campus. Right-wing New York Congressmember Elise Stefanik, who grilled McGill during her congressional testimony, wrote on social media, "One down, two to go." As Stefanik also seeks the ouster of Harvard President Claudine Gay and MIT President Sally Kornbluth, both who testified at the congressional hearing. In Dubai, members of the oil producer alliance OPEC Plus have been blocking progress toward a global agreement to phase out the use of fossil fuels as the UN's COP28 climate summit in Dubai barrels towards its conclusion Tuesday. Led by Saudi Arabia, delegates from OPEC countries backed by coal, oil, and gas lobbyists have rejected any draft text that even mentions fossil fuels. This is Democratic Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey speaking from the sidelines of the COP28 talks Sunday.
COP should conclude with a final statement that says that the world wants to end this addiction. It wants to phase out fossil fuels. OPEC does not want to phase out fossil fuels. They made that very clear yesterday.
On Saturday, hundreds marched within the UN Climate Summit site calling for an end to the burning of fossil fuels as well as a ceasefire in Gaza.
Here to say how mega corporations and fossil fuels industry is melting the planet. We're here to defend a phase out fossil fuels.
Demonstrations at COP28 have been met with heavy censorship. Protesters saw their movement sharply restricted, were barred from displaying national flags, and were given strict limits on what their signs could say and what slogans they were allowed to chant. Another group rallied to demand the release of pro-democracy activists detained in the United Arab Emirates and Egypt, were not allowed to hold up signs bearing the names of the political prisoners, but they uttered those names anyway. A Human Rights Watch researcher called the crackdown a, quote, shocking level of censorship in a space that had been guaranteed to have basic freedoms protected, like freedom of expression, assembly, and association, unquote. The Texas Supreme Court has temporarily blocked a lower court ruling that would have allowed a 20-week pregnant woman to get an abortion. Ken Paxton, Texas's Republican attorney general, intervened to stop the emergency medical procedure and threatened to prosecute any abortion providers involved in giving 31-year-old Kate Cox an abortion. Doctors have told her carrying the non-viable pregnancy to term could make it impossible for her to have more children. Cox's lawyer at the Center for Reproductive Rights says even if the Texas Supreme Court allows the lower court order to stay in place, the delay in treatment could mean, quote, justice delayed will be justice denied. Meanwhile, a pregnant woman in Kentucky is suing over her state's near-total ban on abortions. The lawsuit argues the ban violates Kentucky's constitution. The plaintiff is also seeking class action status so that any positive outcome can be applied to all pregnant people in Kentucky who need or want an abortion. This is Rebecca Gibran, head of Planned Parenthood Kentucky, which is also a plaintiff in the case.
In America, Every 8 hours, a woman dies from pregnancy complications. And evidence is correlating abortion bans as a key factor driving increasing maternal and infant death rates. Tragically, Kentucky has one of the highest maternal death rates in this country.
A judge in Michigan has sentenced the Oxford High School mass shooter to multiple life sentences without parole. Ethan Crumbly was just 15 when he opened fire on the school in November of 2021, killing four people, injuring seven others. This is a former student and survivor speaking at the sentencing hearing.
I, Riley Franz, am a survivor of gun violence. I, Riley Franz, am a survivor of a terrible epidemic caused by a broken system. But I refuse to be known as a victim at the hands of an individual with no regard for others. His selfishness will not consume my identity. I am so much more than a victim.
In Argentina, far-right libertarian Javier Milei has been sworn in as president. He delivered an inaugural speech Sunday from Buenos Aires.
No hay alternativa al ajuste.
There is no alternative to adjustment, and there is no other alternative to shock. Naturally, this will have a negative impact on the level of activity, employment, real wages, and the number of poor.
Javier Milei is a climate crisis denier who's proposed banning abortion and lifting restrictions on guns. He's also vowed to shut down Argentina's central bank, replace the nation's currency with the U.S. dollar. And the children of the jailed Iranian human rights leader Narges Mohammadi accepted the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of their mother at a ceremony in Oslo, Norway, Sunday. 17-year-old twins Kiana and Ali Ramani, who live in France with their father, read their mother's speech, which was smuggled out of Tehran's Evin prison. This is Ali.
The reality is that the regime of the Islamic Republic is at its lowest level of legitimacy and popular support, situated in a position of unstable equilibrium, and the emergence of any element as a catalyst for change will mark the final form of opposition policies and the transition from religious tyranny.
Narges Mohammadi started a new hunger strike the day of the Nobel ceremony in solidarity with the persecuted Baha'i religious minority in Iran. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at allegations that universities have failed to address threats of violence against Jewish students following a contentious congressional hearing on anti-Semitism and a broader effort to restrict pro-Palestinian speech on campus. On Saturday, the University of Pennsylvania president, Elizabeth McGill, resigned her position over fallout from last Tuesday's House Education Committee hearing. UPenn board chair Scott Bach, who announced her resignation, he also resigned soon after. McGill was questioned, along with Harvard president Claudine Gay and MIT president Sally Kornbluth, by the right-wing Republican New York Congressmember and Trump ally Elise Stefanik. This is Stefanik questioning Harvard president Gay first, then UPenn president McGill.
It's a yes or no question. Let me ask you this. You are president of Harvard, so I assume you're familiar with the term intifada, correct?
I've heard that term, yes.
And you understand that the use of the term intifada in the context of the Israeli-Arab conflict is indeed a call for violent armed resistance against the state of Israel, including violence against civilians and the genocide of Jews. Are you aware of that?
That type of hateful speech is personally abhorrent to me.
Well, let me ask you this. Will admissions offers be rescinded or any disciplinary action be taken against students or applicants who say, from the river to the sea or intifada, advocating for the murder of Jews?
As I've said, that type of hateful, reckless, offensive speech is personally abhorrent to me.
Ms. McGill, at Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment, yes.
I am asking, specifically calling for the genocide of Jews, does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
That's University of Pennsylvania President Elizabeth McGill. She announced her resignation Saturday and will remain a tenured law professor at UPenn. Major donors to the University of Pennsylvania had demanded McGill's resignation since September after she refused to cancel the Palestine Rights Literature Festival on campus. New York Republican Congressmember Elise Stefanik herself faced scrutiny for campaign ads she ran last year that echoed Donald Trump and appeared to promote the white supremacist great replacement theory that Jews want to replace and disempower white Americans. She made similar comments after the mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, that was inspired by the great replacement theory. After news of McGill's resignation, Stefanik called for the ouster of the Harvard and MIT presidents, writing on social media, one down, two to go. She was echoed by Trump.
Thank you, Elise. What a job she's done. You know, I watched the way she's very smart. I watched the way she was asking the questions, and they were asked in a very complex way. And these women, who I guess they're smart, but boy, that was, they were really dumb answers, weren't they? But they were asked in a very complex way, and these people had no idea what the hell they were doing. I said, you know, I think she's got to lose her job. I guess they're all going to be losing their job within the next day or two, but one down, two to go.
This comes as Harvard President Claudine Gay has growing support. Some 600 professors signed a petition against calls for her to step down this weekend. The school's board of directors met Sunday. Congressmember Stefanik is a Harvard alumna and was removed from a Harvard advisory board in 2021 over her comments about voter fraud in the 2020 election that had, quote, no basis in evidence. For more, we're joined by Peter Beinart, editor at large of Jewish Currents, and as well an MSNBC contributor, and Omer Bartoff, a professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Brown University, the Israeli-American author of numerous books. His books include recently Genocide, the Holocaust in Israel-Palestine, First-Person History in Times of Crisis. He has been described by the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum as one of the world's leading specialists on the subject of genocide. Peter Beinart, let's begin with you. Your response to the congressional hearing and the grilling of the three women presidents of MIT, Harvard, and UPenn, and the resignation then of UPenn President McGill, as well as the chair of the Board of Trustees, Scott Bach, who announced her resignation, then resigned himself.
This really isn't about those individual presidents. It's about the fact that given the extraordinary slaughter that's happening in Gaza, there is a movement on college campuses and across America for a ceasefire and to end American complicity in that slaughter. And in response to that, the effort is now to try to limit the ability of people who want to protest U.S. policy and support Palestinian rights from being able to organize on college campuses. So the reason that you're going after these presidents is to try to set a precedent and bring in people who will be much tougher on restricting the ability of students and faculty and others who want to organize politically against this war in Gaza. This is what this is about.
And if you can talk about exactly what happened for people who missed it this past week. We just played an excerpt of the questioning by Stefanik. I mean, it went on for hours, the overall congressional testimony, but it came down to these points, and this is the critical point. She said, it's a yes or no question. Let me ask you this. You are president of Harvard, so I assume you're familiar with the term intifada, correct? And President Gay says, I've heard that term. Congressmember Stefanik says, you understand the use of the term intifada in the context of the Israeli-Arab conflict is indeed a call for violent armed resistance against the state of Israel, including violence against civilians and the genocide of Jews. This was the question they were asked. Elaborate on that, Peter Beinart, and talk about their responses.
Right. The premise of the question was just nonsense, right? The premise of the question is that intifada, which essentially means uprising, is the equivalent of an attempt at genocide at Jews. Intifada is actually a term that has been used even in uprising against Arab governments. Intifada can take nonviolent forms. The first intifada had a lot of nonviolence. The second intifada tragically involved suicide bombings, which were horrifying and totally immoral. But these were uprisings in the context of oppression. It's like saying of a Ukrainian uprising against Russians that also killed Russian civilians would be an attempt at Russian genocide. It makes no sense. But the problem was that these presidents, because they were not willing to contest the premise, because they were so lawyered up and defensive in their answers, that they basically accepted the premise and then were put in this ridiculous position where they didn't say it would be unacceptable for people to call for the genocide of Jews. Of course it would be unacceptable for people to call in mass protest for the genocide of Jews, but that's not what was happening.
I want to bring Omer Bartov into this discussion. You're considered by the Holocaust Museum one of the leading scholars on genocide. And go to this second point. Congressmember Stefanik was asking the college presidents. She said, well, let me ask you this. Will admission offers be rescinded or any disciplinary action be taken against students or applicants who say, from the river to the sea, or Intifada, advocating the murder of Jews, equating from the river to the sea and Intifada with the murder of Jews? Can you respond to this and also explain that term and how it's been used by both Hamas, but also protesters and the Likud party in Israel?
Well, hi, and thank you for having me. First of all, I want to agree with what Peter was saying. I think that this whole debate is so off kilter. The terms that are being used are being misused and are not being challenged by these three presidents who should have been better prepared, not by their lawyers, but actually to study the issue itself and to have spoken about how they think about it. Using the term intifada is, of course, wrong, as Peter was saying. It means uprising, and uprising against oppression, one should support it. Using the term from the river to the sea can mean all kinds of things. There are 7 million Jews living between the river and the sea, and 7 million Palestinians. Historically, speaking about from the river to the sea, or in fact, both banks of the river in the traditional Zionist revisionist ideology meant that the Jews should be in control of Eretz Israel, of the land of Israel. I apologize.
Repeat that point.
Yeah, sorry. The term from the river to the sea, Greater Israel, which means Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, that land stretches between the Jordan.
We're hearing you fine.
I'm sorry, I'm getting an interruption here. The land between the Jordan and the sea, and in fact, for some of the traditional revisionist movement, the right wing of the Zionist party, meant also across the river, even east of the river, into what is now known as Jordan, Transjordan at the time. So to say that that is an anti-Semitic term or that it calls for the genocide of the Jews is nonsense. It can mean, if you look at it from the point of view of the Israeli right, that Jews have the right to rule over all the land of Israel. And many of the people who are now in Netanyahu's government, the settler right-wing Jewish supremacists such as Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they would like to rule over all the land, and they would like the Palestinians to go away or to agree to be ruled over by the Jews. Now, it can also mean the opposite. If you look at what Hamas has been saying, it can mean exactly the opposite. Hamas indeed wants to create an Islamic Palestinian state where Jews would either have no room or would have to be living there in a smaller numbers and be tolerated. And so it does not mean what people say unless you ask them, what do they mean? And in that sense, putting these three presidents to answer these questions, to my mind, A, they should have said, look, if you speak about genocide, no one should condone genocide, not of Jews and not of anyone else. If you're speaking about intifada or about political slogans, you have to explain what they are, how we understand them. But beyond that, I have to say that this whole discussion seems to me to be the least important issue. What is most important is that Israel now has been conducting a war for weeks and weeks in which it has killed thousands and thousands of Palestinians. It has moved them to a very small part of the Gaza Strip. It has destroyed their property and has not even made a commitment to allow them to return, and has been doing that with enormous amounts of American-supplied munitions, not only rockets, but also tank shells, artillery shells, and anti-rocket rockets. And that has to stop, and there has to be a political plan as to how to move to the next day, which is what Netanyahu is refusing to do. This is the main issue, not how we talk about politics on American campuses. That's useful to talk about it, but it's not the main emergency issue right now, to my mind.
I wanted to ask you two questions. You're in Paris, France now, but you're generally in Cambridge, and you're a professor at Brown University in Providence. What should Claudine Gay, the president of Harvard, do you feel at this point should she do? Hundreds of Harvard professors have rallied around her. And I also wanted to ask about Hisham Awatani, who is the Brown University student, a student at your school, who was shot with two other Palestinian students in Burlington, could well be paralyzed, a horrifying situation. I mean, I think there's no question that anti-Semitism is increasing around the country, and that is very serious, and also Islamophobia.
Yes, I mean both are of course increasing, and we should do everything we can against them. And what happened with Hisham and the other two Palestinian students is horrible. In some ways, I would say it reflects both the heated discussion that we have about Israel-Palestine, and also the kind of gun culture and violence that we have in America, quite separately from what is happening in the Middle East. As for resignations of presidents, I think this would be terrible. I totally support those. I'm not a Harvard faculty. My wife is, but I totally support those people who have come out against her resignation. I think it would give completely the wrong signal because the pressure is coming in large part from donors. That will create an impression that there is pressure from moneyed people, that there's pressure from often people who are identified with Jewish interests, with right-wing Israelis, with the Israeli government, to control speech. And just as there has been, I must say, and that was reflected in the responses by these presidents, great sort of timidity in saying anything that is not correct speech, to correct it the other way, to try and control it in a way that does not allow criticism of Israel, presents criticism of Israel's anti-Semitism, and to do it by firing, for instance, at Harvard, the first African-American president of Harvard, would be an absolute disaster, and I would totally oppose it.
I wanted to end by asking Peter Beinart about Democratic Congress member, Republican Congress member Stefanik and her history. This is Democratic Congress member Jamie Raskin of Maryland speaking on MSNBC.
with lax Republican gun laws across the country, we've got to take very seriously anybody who's making any kind of violent threats, especially genocidal threats. Having said that, where does Elise Stefanik get off lecturing anybody about anti-Semitism when she's the hugest